right. While you are getting set up and take your time, I'm just going to call the case. It's A23-1109, Stockholm Township Respondent versus Glenn A. Schmidt et al. Appellants, Bank Community Service Corporation et al. Defendants. Council, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and Council for Appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. When you start your principal arguments, we'd appreciate if you state your name and the name of your client for the record. The podium goes up and down. There's a toggle switch in the center of it, kind of below, to raise it up if it's too low for you, and raise it down the opposite. And we're ready for you, Council for Appellant, when you are.
Thank you, honorable judges, opposing counsel. May it please the court, my name is Jacob Erickson. I represent the appellants, Glenn and Heidi Schmidt. We're here today on what is a de novo review of the district court's summary judgment awarding an injunction preventing my clients from using real estate that they own in Stockholm Township as a short-term rental. As outlined in the brief, this would be a de novo review because it's an application of the law. In looking at the Franks case and its line of cases, when these ordinances are reviewed, it's supposed to be strictly against the municipal body and in favor of the property owner. And that's functionally the problem that we're here for today, is that the district court did not strictly construe these ordinances, but instead very broadly construed them in favor of the municipality against my client's private property interests. The court also looks, according to the plan, at ordinary meeting of the rules, and also in light of the policy and goals that are outlined in the ordinance, as well as in the state. The district court committed a legal error here that it's our position needs to be remedied for all property owners in the state, and that by preventing the Schmidts from renting their property as a short-term rental, it's really an unjust restrictive use restriction on their property, as they do have the right to rent, as outlined in the Dean case in our brief. And really, I think this case is most akin to that Douglas v. Owen case, which admittedly is unpublished, but I couldn't find another case very similar to this, where again, we're dealing with the same issue here. The real estate my clients own meets the definition of the statute, and nobody disagrees with that. It's a single-family home. It's not a mobile home. It's not a hotel. It's not subdivided into a bunch of different rooms that are locked. There's no sign out front saying vacancy. It just looks like a regular house from the outside. The issue here is with how it's used. And the municipality, and by extension in convincing the district court, has really gotten the district court to read these ordinances and all the different provisions in a way that are very restrictive to say this use somehow is a violation, is inappropriate.
So let's turn to the ordinance and frame it. You're in R1, that's the zoning district, right?
Yes.
So 605, section 605 of the ordinance outlines the permitted uses for R1, the accessory uses, the conditional uses, and then says all other uses not listed shall be prohibited. So somewhere your use needs to fall into one of those uses, right?
Well, again, I think that still goes into identifying the way that the property is used. There was another situation where there was agricultural land, and functionally the people that lived there were using it also as a store, even though it was R1. They were selling tractors there. There's a bunch of tractors out front. They have these big commercial trailers out there with the name of the business on the side. They've changed the fundamental way that that farm looks by the way that they're using the property, and that's not the case here.
So you, if I asked you, looking at the permitted uses, the accessory uses, and the conditional use, what use, Where should we look to authorize your clients what's happening here?
Oh,
you can't point to one?
I think it's not that it's what authorizes it. It's that it's not unauthorized.
That's
really the issue. They're still using it as a single-family home. I'm sorry, I shouldn't...
Okay. Single-family home, I don't read anywhere there. What I see in permitted uses, if I look there, the only one that I think arguably applies, I would assume you agree, is single-family detached residence.
Yes, that's what the building is.
Single-family detached residence. And the question and that's what you think this is.
Mm-hmm.
And as I look at single-family detached residence, you go in your argument immediately into something called the single-family dwelling. I don't see the word single-family dwelling here. I see it when I look at agricultural zone, for example. It talks about you can only have one single-family dwelling per thing. But I was trying to, I'm wondering, why do you go to that definition when what we're trying to figure out is a single-family detached residence?
Because of the way that this ordinance was written is very confusing. And I think that's part of what came up in that Douglas case where they don't necessarily use the same terms over and over. They kind of lead us to have to read those designations through. What's a single family dwelling? Well, it's something designed for use by a single family. Well, what's a family? It's a bunch of people who are related by blood or marriage.
Right. Those are defined, right? Family is defined. And then and in its definition, it talks about single family dwelling. I understand that. But we're trying to look at a single family detached residence. And I think what the district court looked at is residence is not defined by the ordinance. Let's look at whether it's a plain language. We could look at maybe definitions to see what residence. And district court, I think, decided that this means a permitted use is a family residing, a single family residing in a residing there. And that residing means living there. What's wrong with, why isn't that a plain reading of single family detached residence?
Well, there's a lot of different issues there, and I'm going to try to not go too far afield so that I can try to address all of them.
Yeah.
Because I think one issue kind of what we're talking about here of saying, hey, it has to be a single family that's in there, which is something that Stockholm County talks about. I mean, that would be prohibited by Minnesota statute. That would violate the Human Rights Act 363A.09 because it would restrict sale, use, rental of real estate based on requiring people to all be the same family. And the Human Rights Act restricts the normals, race, color, religion, and creed, but it also says you can't discriminate based on marital status or familial status.
There's an argument you make in your briefs that it would be an as-applied violation of the Human Rights Act.
I would say I argue about that in the brief with saying that, you know, by reading that the only people who can ever be in the home are specific family members, it produces that absurd result of you can never, your daughter can never have a friend stay over. Because now you have somebody who's not related by family or blood being in your home. Okay. And the not strictly construed reading of the statute, which the district court seems to have taken and the township wants them to, the very overly broad one would prohibit that. I think that is in there. It is an extrapolation that would be here. And I think it comes up really more in that as you're kind of asking me these questions. Another one that I would bring up where you say, well, hey, these things that aren't specifically authorized must be barred. Again, when we look at Frank's, if we look at, you know, having to kind of analyze the situation, the thought that comes to me immediately would be solar panels, okay? Right now, there's a big love of solar panels. There's federal credits for them. We want people to get them. It reduces carbon emission, allows houses to be more or less kind of off the grid to generate their own power so that it's not damaging. And when you do that, the excess energy generated by solar panels goes back to the power company. The power company has to pay you for it. So arguably, you've now started running a business on your single-family detached residential dwelling, whatever it is that we're calling it, merely by complying with public policy to put these solar panels up because now there's some kind of incidental business. And a very general reading, which is what the district court is doing here, could come in and say, no, you're not allowed to do that. But that's opposite of what our case law says. What Frank says is, no, you have to be restrictive of the municipality, and you have to look at these kind of policy considerations, and that would be allowed. So I don't believe that my clients have the burden of proving they're allowed to do it.
So,
I'm sorry.
If I may.
Yeah.
So your argument, if you take it to the natural extension, would be that the prohibited uses language there, 605.41, all other uses not listed are permitted. You shouldn't be able to do that. Municipalities shouldn't be able to have that sort of language because it doesn't meet kind of the Frank's Nursery test. I just don't know of any, but maybe you do, of a precedent that would go that far.
I think there would be cases on that because there's cases, and I'm blanking on a citation. I should have printed it because I looked at it today, that the ordinances can't violate state rules on things. So like the case they're talking about there was like there's this rental ordinance and they wanted different electrical features and other things and the Supreme Court came back and said, no, you can't do that. You can't have your rental ordinance be more restrictive than our state ones. So to the extent they have this catch-all provision that they want to put in there, I think it goes into that whole kind of contract analysis of the municipality is doing it at their own their own risk by not specifying those things. Because anything that they'd say, well, this is out of here, you can't do it, for example, like a daycare facility, that's not a specific enumerated risk, therefore you can't do it here because it's caught up by our case law. Well, that's actually specifically listed as permitted single-family use under a statute, 462.357 subdivision 7, which allows residential facilities, housing, and establishing people with six or fewer persons, a licensed daycare facility, and licensed daycare facilities could have up to 14 people living there at a time. Again, not all family members, not related by blood. That's specifically authorized, even though this catch-all provision ordinance would seem to say that you can't do that. And I think that kind of goes back to the Franks case of you have to be able to articulate a specific policy and say why it is you're doing what you're doing. You know, we don't allow any other things here because it would affect our goal of having in what's listed in the ordinance of, you know, we want this agricultural area to slowly develop into a small town. You know, we don't want a bunch of hotels there because then we have to make wider roads. We have to put in more electrical circuits. We have to have more sewers and pipe water going in. You have to have these big parking lots. So we're not going to let you do that here because it's supposed to be kind of this more small towny area. That, I think, is what they're allowed to do with that. But you can't take away, like, you know, the right to rent property, just saying, because I didn't say you can rent your property, you can't do it. That's a presumed right that people as property owners have, as outlined in that case.
What does residence mean, in your view? When an ordinance says residences, what does that mean?
I would say it's a place that people live in for any period of time, and it's
including for a weekend. If you rent, is it a resident? Are the renters who rent the VRBO renters? Are they residing there?
I would say, yeah, it's still residents. They're residing there for a period of time. They may not have established permanent residence there because they weren't there for 180 days, but it's still the place that they're living at that period of time. And in this case, they're still one small family unit using the house as if it was just one group of people. So
you say family unit. Well, I mean anyone coming together in a house.
Like, I guess the other thing I was thinking about as I was sitting here is, let's say you got four guys from college, all really good friends. They want to buy a house together in Stockholm Township. They're not related. They're not going to get married. And for the sake of this, we're going to assume that there's not going to be any kind of sexual interaction. They're just guys wanting to live together in a house. If they wanted to buy the house under the strict, very restrictive reading that we're getting from Stockholm Township, they couldn't do that because they're not all related by family. And you can't do that even with your catch-all provision because Human Rights Act says you can't discriminate that way. So it's still a residence, even though there's four unrelated people living there that may have all their separate rooms, because the building itself is still a residence. You know, if I drove by this place and looked at five houses in a row, I look at them, and you know them as a seam, saying, I hate to say the I know it when I see it argument from our Supreme Court, but you see these houses sitting on the side of the road, you're like, yeah, those are residences. And whether the person in there is there for a weekend and then leaves, or is there for 30 days, or is there for 10 years, it doesn't change as I drive by seeing that. It's still the residence. And that's really what I think Douglas County got at in the Owen case, is just because I'm renting this house to somebody for a weekend or a couple weekend, and I might have different neighbors more often, it doesn't suddenly change it into a resort. And there's really no public policy reason that I can think of that's good, where neighbors should be able to say, I don't like that I have new neighbors next door frequently, or I don't like people being there that are different from me. Those are not legitimate reasons and therefore be unduly restrictive, and that's why we believe the district court erred, and this is an important legal error that needs to be reversed.
Great, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Unless you want to continue. We just ran off over your...
I'm sorry, I guess we went over my...
Oh, no, we didn't go over your...
The number is doing all kinds of... I thought it said 2 minutes.
I thought you had wound up, but we can give you two more minutes.
Oh.
I think you still have that, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, really, at the end of the day, I don't think it was even disputed that this home meets that definition of being that single family detached residence. I don't think that was ever really an argument. There's some arguments about what is a residence, what are these things. And again, it's very strictly adding language into the ordinance against the property owner's rights to create this outcome that really is pretty unjust without any real benefit. My client's use of the property isn't greatly increasing traffic. They don't have to put up a new parking lot out there. It's not like there's 1,000 people staying there. It's still basically the same number of people. It's under that statutory allowed number of 14 children plus the providers, clearly. So it isn't putting those strains on the infrastructure that the ordinance is designed to avoid. And for that reason, they haven't run afoul of that old ordinance, and it was inappropriate to issue the injunction. Thank you.
Is there an injunction issued?
Yes, it was summary judgment and an injunction that prevented my clients from renting their properties as a short-term rental. And because the injunction was written very broadly, it now sounds like respondents are arguing, well, this means you can't rent your property at all, not short-term, but there are no rentals allowed. I think that would be problematic because I don't think other rental properties in the town have been treated that way, and I think that that would, again, be kind of an absurd and overly restrictive reading of the ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Your Honors, this is Samantha Zelke on behalf of Respondent Stockholm Township, and I'm here to ask that this court affirm the district court. For some context in this case, Stockholm Township is an agricultural town of about 900 residents with a scenic shoreline within 1 hour of Minneapolis and a 156-page zoning ordinance, which means that for every 5 residents, there's 1 page of zoning ordinance. And on the front page of that ordinance is the town's policy in enacting it, which includes the protection of its natural resources, preserving agricultural land, conserving the natural and scenic beauty of its communities, and protecting the welfare, morals, and comfort of the community. And the appellants here are in an R1 zoning district where there is no rental of any property contemplated. And appellants here are selling this peace and the beauty that's cultivated by the township through this ordinance in violation of that ordinance and to the detriment of the community. Here, I'm going to discuss, hopefully briefly first, that when appellants are stating that they have a home occupation, they're really only arguing about what type of impermissible use is under the ordinance, because that's only a conditional use. There's no permanent permit here. So we're really arguing about what impermissible use appellants have. But beyond that, because that doesn't seem to be a big issue so far, the ordinance heavily regulates the transient uses of property, and it doesn't contemplate rentals within the R1 district by the plain text of the ordinance, and that the town's policy supports this regulation, and towns, according to case law, have broad authority to regulate zoning ordinances and regulate uses of property. To address a couple arguments first, I'm going to rely primarily on the briefing. This town's ordinance is not confusing like the ordinance at issue in Douglas. The court there was bound by a typographical error in the in the ordinance, something along the lines of a single family is related by blood prior to, unless, but for, something like that, where it was just nonsensical, and the court was bound by that description, where it had to conclude that a family was a group of people who shared cookware. And this town's ordinance is 156 pages. It's very technical. It is not confusing. It defines single-family dwelling. It differentiates, it uses the word residence, it clearly cares about the use of property within the township. Okay. And separately, I did not see that there was a Human Rights Act violation briefed. I am not prepared to argue on the other side that there's a Human Rights Act violation here. I strongly believe that there is not, but
Was that raised in the district court?
No. That was not raised below. This is the first time that I'm hearing that there is a Human Rights Act issue here.
What should we look at? What do you think the definition of residences is in the permitted use?
So that is a very legal term of art. A residence is a place where one actually lives. That's found in Black's Law Dictionary, and we follow that all throughout our case law in Minnesota. If we turn around and say, yes, a residence is where I am for a weekend, this turns a multitude of state case law on its head. What are we going to do with our election laws or service, driver's licenses? Where do you reside? Is it that verbo you stayed at last year? We don't know.
So we should look at Black's?
We should look at Black's Law Dictionary saying that your residence is the place where you actually reside. So
what about the going back to the definition of single-family dwelling? Mm-hmm. You know, assuming that is relevant to this analysis at some point. I think one could look at that, you know, a detached permanent structure designed for use by one family only. Okay, and so the question is, then you could say, are we going to focus on whether it's designed for use, mm-hmm. which I think is appellant's argument, or what it's used for? And if that that could arguably be a close question, and then wouldn't we look at Frank's Nursery and say, okay, and, you know, as appellant states, an ordinance like this must be strictly construed and against the government. Could you address, that issue for me?
Yes, thank you, Judge Jessen. Yes, so the district court is correct that here we are looking at what the property is used for. And to that, it's because the property has the town has regulated uses of property throughout the zoning ordinance. It's regulated the use of property as rentals very heavily. It's determined that you can only use rentals in 4 of the districts, some as conditional use, 1 as explicit use. And speaking to Frank's Nursery, yes, you do construe ordinances strictly against the township. However, you have to also view them in light of the policy of the township, which here is conserving the natural beauty. We really care about preserving our communities, and that language about preserving communities and the agricultural land and the scenic beauty of our communities, that's straight on the first page of the ordinance.
Why would that policy be in conflict with single-family dwelling, though, which is about designed for? I mean, I'm not sure I see. I mean, single-family dwelling, as I said, comes up as, I think, a permitted use in agricultural zone. I think it's listed under permitted use, maybe. Might have that wrong. But in any event, that doesn't seem to be in conflict with the policy language at the start of the ordinance.
Sure, and that's if the single-family dwelling is used as a single family use, if it's used as a dwelling for a single family.
Okay.
Okay. So beyond that, and I would just like to briefly discuss that the Schmidts here are minimizing their use of the property as a rental. In their briefing, they say that this property is being rented for less than 30 days at a time. And from the limited data that we have, we see that it's been rented by at least 148 people over 10 and a half weeks. That's a lot of revolving faces in the community. That's adding density to the area. It's a lack of stability for the residents and for this scenic area. And the property over that 10 and a half weeks, it was only not occupied by a kind of this rotating cast of characters for 9 days total. And we, frankly, we don't know if there are any more people staying on the property, because on the listing it says, inquire with us about renting the property next door. So you can rent the property. You can have 12 people renting the property and then people staying at the cabin next door, but that's taken care of face-to-face. That's not logged anywhere. So, frankly, we don't know from the record if there are more than the 148 people who are staying on the property.
Counsel, was there an injunction issued in this case?
No. The district court did not analyze an injunction. They determined that under the 1992 zoning ordinance, this use was not permissible. but the court did not otherwise analyze an injunction.
Do you have more, or would you like to wrap up? Or you have plenty of time, but I don't also want to force you to stand and tell us more.
If there are no further questions, I will offer my conclusion.
Sounds good.
Thank you. So, Your Honors, the town here promulgated its zoning ordinance with the policy to preserve its natural resources, the beauty of its neighborhoods and its farmlands, and with respect to the morals, comfort, and general welfare of the community. And pursuant to that policy, it regulated its R1 district as places where people aren't here to party, they're here to live. Appellant's transient rental use of this property violates the ordinance pursuant to the plain language of that ordinance. And because of that and for the reasons briefed, we ask that you affirm the district court. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, counsel, and counsel for appellant.
Thank you, Your Honors. I have a few points that I just want to respond to. When we look at the definition of residence that's offered to simply say it's a place that somebody resides, I think that my middle school English teacher would be spinning in her grave using the same word to define itself. Okay, well, what's reside mean? It's a place you live, okay? I live in a hotel for a period of time. I'm residing there. By that definition, hotels are residence. It's not this specific, clearly articulated thing that the township is trying to lay out. And to say that this ordinance, because it's very long, is extremely well written and that's different, it doesn't define the thing we're talking about. That's the thing that, Your Honor, Judge Smith was talking about of, hey, this thing that says that it's permitted use isn't defined up above, so theoretically none of these houses can be here. They all have to be torn down the way that they're reading it.
I'm sorry, I didn't follow what you just argued.
Well, if we're going to say that the only permitted use is a single-family detached residence, and there's no definition of that term above, we have to piece it together from the other definitions above. That is not
the only permitted use, it's A. There's a list of permitted uses.
But if that as a permitted use isn't defined above, because hotels are defined above, how the heck are we supposed to know what those things are? That's not clearly and well written. That goes into the same area that we had with that Douglas County v. Owen case. And I think it would be wrong to say that the county lost just because they didn't define family right. They defined family more restrictively than I would say Stockholm did. And there, it was again just found that, no, it didn't change the nature of this building. It's still a single residence. And they said density. It doesn't change the density. If you still have basically a same, what we would call familial unit living in the home, that doesn't change things. There are families that have 6 kids and 2 parents. 8 people might be there one day. 4 people might be there another day. But it isn't like all 160 of these renters were in this house at the same time affecting density, because now you run into the problems that they can regulate. We need a parking lot. We need more sewage treatment. We need more water. We need more food services. Here, nothing of their intent and purpose is harmed by the way that my clients are using this property. We haven't destroyed the scenic lake. That's why they want it. They want the scenic lake to be there because we want to share that with other people. And to suggest that that's bad because now members of this tiny, small community have to see new faces and deal with them, as a matter of public policy, is not acceptable. It's not okay for us to say we don't like our neighbors because they're new or they're different, and so we're going to keep them out, whether it's for a short period of time or not. And that goes into the issue of residence. I'm not turning residence rules on their head. You don't suddenly come here for a weekend and now you can file for divorce, because our residency rules address how long you're residing at that place to get that residency. No one's going to let you vote if you stayed there for 2 days because you stayed someplace else, and odds are at the time of the election you were staying at your house and that's where you got to reside. But theoretically, I mean, if we wanted to look at the way that the township wants to look at this, you could buy the house, live there for 5 months, sell it to somebody else. Have you now violated the residency restriction because your new house you move into, you lived there 7 months instead of 5 months, so you didn't really reside in Stockholm Township and your purchase of the home was illegal? That's the kind of weird crap we get when we start saying residence is this you have to live there for your only place argument. I don't know how to express that in a way to say that what it is that the township is saying really doesn't work out. If you're there for 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 20 years, really what difference does that make in that it's still a residence, it's still a place people are going to point and say that's a residence, it's a private party residence, and people live there. Overall, There's this Barfield case, the county of Coochiching, 716 Northwest 2nd, 406, that I think goes to the argument that they've raised here about, look, it's harming our morals, it's harming our intent. It's not sufficient to just generally say we have these things out there and we think that there might be a problem. They, as the moving party for summary judgment, need to prove those facts up that an undisputed matter that that's actually a harm. They can't just allege we might have problems with our morals or we might have too many people there or it could create density issues. They have to prove that, and they didn't. There isn't stuff in the record to support that argument. So at the very least, it would have to go back on summary judgment to address those factual issues that they're raising, because there's nothing that shows that my client's use of this property hurts any of the intent and purpose of the ordinance.
When does the purpose of the ordinance, when does a court look at the purpose of the ordinance? If the court decides the plain language means X, does it need to go to the purpose? Does it have to go to the purpose?
Yes, it still started that Strickland analysis, or Frank's analysis in the other cases, that you have to strictly construe the language, but you also have to look at the intent and purpose and the privacy interest in imposing it. It's part of that three-stage test rule. So I'd say yes, you still have to look at it to say, even if maybe there's a very clear reading in there, it's still unduly restrictive of private interest rights and therefore shouldn't be upheld. I think that's what happened in the Franks case, is that strictly this nursery that they were going to put in wasn't going to be the exact kind of nursery that they wanted. And so the city came and said, look, our language and our ordinance clearly says that this doesn't work, even though we made these other accommodations. And there the appellate court said, no, they're still allowed to have their nursery there, even though it doesn't meet strictly with the rules.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm out of time. I hope that answers
your
question.
You can wrap up, or?
Just really at the end of the day, there isn't really any harm that my clients have done by renting it that justifies this kind of restriction from the court. And we'd ask that it be reversed, that my clients can enjoy their property. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for your briefing. Thank you for your oral arguments. Case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time period. And with that, we are adjourned.
All rise.